Hello and welcome to In Stitches, the upholstery podcast for upholsterers, telling your story and inspiring others. It is my honour and great pleasure to introduce Bruno today to the podcast. Bruno, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Robbie, and nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant. So I guess what I always do is ask the first question is take me back to your school days and coming up to leaving school. Did you know what you wanted to do when you left school and so on?
I did, as a matter of fact. In high school, I was music major and linguistic minor. And after graduating from high school, it appeared that a career in music was not really, you know, the greatest thing. So I opted for upholstery to learn the upholstery trade, because I was surrounded by people from the environment of upholstery, such as finisher, cabinet makers, and my mother being a trade milliner in the 20s in Paris, and being a dressmaker and dress designer, I was always surrounded by threads and buttons. And actually, yeah, her workshop was my bedroom, or actually my bedroom was her workshop for years. So to me, to go in the upholstery trade was a normal, so to speak, normal path coming from, my surroundings. Actually, I wanted to be a tailor. I wanted to do what my mother was doing. And then she basically discouraged me. So the next thing, fabric-wise, the next thing was to deal with fabric was to get into upholstery.
Yeah.
And I entered a trade school in Paris, which was now renamed La Bonne Graine in the 12th arrondissement. I mean, sorry, in the 11th arrondissement.
Yeah.
And that was a formal, traditional training, which consisted of 40 hours at the bench and one day at school. And and then you graduate, and after the graduations, you obtain a certificate of aptitude. And with that certificate, you can be employed in shops. So that's your password, okay. Passport, so to speak, to gain employment.
So if you got that passport, then you would get employment without question.
Oh yeah,
isn't that what a fantastic system? Is it still like that today, or has it changed?
No, it's still valid. It's still the same way.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic! It's brilliant. I'm quite envious, really. So, what was your first job? Where did you start?
My first job, as I was apprenticed, or my first job after I graduated.
After you graduated.
After I graduated, my first job was a pair of what we call in France, crapaud, which is basically those chairs with a lumbar bustle, very pronounced lumbar bustle, fully upholstered over the rail. And that was a job for my boss girlfriend. She had a boss that needed to have those two chairs reupholstered, and I needed to do some work and to gain experience. So I took on the project. And as a novice, I totally messed it up. and I had to go and get more fabric. And thank God the fabric was still available. So I fixed everything. And at the end, it became okay. The lady was pleased and everything was fine.
So I mean particularly I follow you, and loads of people follow you on Instagram and so on, and I'm sort of your craftsmanship and your skill is just crazy.
Thank you.
Is it something that you've just had a natural instinct for? Have you worked really hard to, and I know that sounds a stupid question, but it's just like that whole sort of, there's an artistry to your work and many others, but is it something that is instinctive, or is it something you've worked bloody hard at?
Maybe it's coming from my growing up, or the way I was raised, or maybe it's coming from my French culture. I know that many of my contemporaries upholsterers are really very astute and detail oriented, And the fact of the matter is that if you are doing French upholstery, particularly period pieces, stamped pieces, exquisite furniture, you have to have a certain mindset of precision. And it's just a job that requires it, and it becomes second nature, actually. I think you develop good habits, and that's why it's important, developing good habits. So whether it's instinctive or not, I'm not, I don't know, maybe it is at some level, or maybe it became, but I have to say it was definitely a learned process. You have to apply yourself, and I think applying yourself when you start is good, but applying yourself for 40 years, that's what the challenge is.
Yeah.
Because you have to remain, you have to remain your true self, and you have to keep your enthusiasm all the way to the end. And and that is at the end, not really about upholstery anymore. It goes further than that. So you, you know, you had the love of it, or the appreciation of it, or the reverence that you have with it, you need to nurture that. And I think to nurture that, you need to continue to be dedicated to do exquisite work, regardless, I think regardless of the price or the client, it doesn't matter the client. What matters is that when he gets out the door, you're satisfied and you're pleased with your work.
Yeah, yeah, it's everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, question I want to ask, but I kind of want to, I think there's such a big story here. How did you end up in America when you were born in France, in Paris?
Well, music brought me to America.
Did it?
Mm. Yeah, it's funny because I meet a lot of people nowadays that want to change career and second career upholsterers. You know, they had a professional experience before, and then they turn into upholstery. And when I was in my 20s, it was the other way around. I basically wanted to, you know, upholstery was basically my spare tire, so to speak, in life. Yeah. But my car, my main set of wheels were was music. So I went to attend Berklee College of Music in Boston, and and I was accepted to attend there. And I took one semester after another, and it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, okay.
And I did upholstery on the side too. I had some jobs, working in some shops, so gave me some concept of what American upholstery was all about, which was very different from my experience in France.
Yeah.
I met a woman, and we had a baby, and everything changed.
as it does. Yeah.
As it does. Yeah. And a few years later, after the birth of my daughter, I opened my shop. I worked in a few shops in America. And when I saw the level and the quality of work that was being done, I just decided to open my own shop because I had to make a statement.
So can I ask when that was? Do you mind me asking sort of how long
did you set
your shop up?
It was, I opened the shop, it was in 1986.
Do you have like a mentor, someone you discuss things with?
At the moment, no.
But you have in the past.
But I had many mentors, yeah. I think the very first mentor was my first boss in the very first shop I apprenticed. He was a full-fledged interior decorator, and it means, in France, it's called tapissier décorateur, which means that you, if you open shop, you have to have the knowledge of just about everything that takes place in the house environment in terms of decoration, fabric, curtains, and carpet. And he had extensive knowledge on the fabrication and color scheme and things like that. It was very impressive to me. The second one was Roger. Roger was the man at the bench, and he basically taught me the everyday upholstery trade techniques and things like that.
Yeah. I don't know if you can answer this, but What part of the craft do you enjoy most? What gives you the most pleasure, or is it just the whole thing?
The most pleasure is when I am facing a piece of furniture that has been through the French Revolution, the American yeah. Revolution, World War One, World War Two. And I look at this piece with a lot of reverence. And after a while, I notice that it is not me looking at the piece of furniture, but it is the furniture that is looking at me saying, are you worth it? Are you worthy to put your hands on me? And then I'm like, well, if you're in front of me, let's do it. But this is where it's at. I think this is the, to me, the epitome and of the trade, of the craft is when you are responsible to maintain and to carry on history. And that's basically what's all about.
Yeah.
And also building new furniture is a lot of fun too. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of aspect that I love about the trade. Or designing furniture, building furniture. But at the end of the day, I think the most important, you know, soulful is when I'm facing, when I'm dealing with history. To me, it's much more important.
Yeah. No, I can understand that totally. And again, proudest moment, is there something that stands out in your upholstery career that really stands above others, or is it just not like that for you?
Yeah, and it was nothing to do with historical upholstery. It has to do with actually more fabric walling and architecture and design. I was hired to do the walling of a private theater for an important person that lives in Seattle. I won't mention the name, but just the city will give you a hint. And he had a personal private theater. And we developed chairs for the theater, and the chairs had a little tray. And in the tray, it was a cup holder that would swing out of the tray. The tray would rotate 380 degrees, and you could put the tray whether on the left of the chair or on the right of the chair, depending if you are left-handed or right-handed. So that was one part of the project that was really exciting, is to develop that chair. And you had a lamp on the tray as well. I mean, so it was, and the lamp had, it was a cone, and it was a lot of details and very, very elaborate. And and then we had to do a set of chairs for the winter and a set of chairs for the summer. And then a set of chairs for, you know, smaller version of the chair to have more people. But the highlight of the project was to produce the walling. The walling was basically second walling from the existing walls. And it was comprised of a domed 3 feet by 3 feet dome panels. And they were anchored to a substructure. The substructure was basically anchored to the original wall, which was concrete. And those panels were anchored to the substructure. And you had to have a space between the panels, the upholstery panels, and the original wall to house speakers for the theater. And not only that, but the panels per se that were upholstered had to be done with a certain type of mesh in order to have the sound going through. So the original sample, I had to make a one-to-one sample, and the one-to-one sample was made out of foam just to have a sense of the volume and the shape, because it was not flat. It had like an upholstered feel to it. But we couldn't do the foam on the wall because of the speakers, so we had to develop those hollow panels that were anchored to the substructure. And in between each panel, you had a conic alabaster lamp. It was really outstanding. I mean, totally outstanding. Yeah. Every single wall was done like that. It was a crazy job. Yeah. Really crazy.
that sounds like a long job as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask, how long have you been upholstering? How long have you been doing the job?
Since 40-something years, maybe 40 years, 42 years now.
Okay, all right. And if you were starting out again today,
right,
how would you go about learning the trade? What would you do to get to the level that you are now?
I think I would enter the guild of Compagnons du Devoir.
Okay.
And I will go through that route. I didn't go through that route, and it's one of my main regrets. But I would go through the Compagnons du Devoir. Yeah, I would enter the Compagnons, definitely.
And if as many listeners aren't French, where else? For example, in the States, where would you go if you were to start again?
To learn the trade in the state, I would have to go to England.
Okay.
Oh, I would go to the British School of Upholstered Furniture, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Because there's no schooling here. There's no...
Yeah, no.
There's no, absolutely no schooling here. It's a ghost. It's an old world trade. It's a ghost, kind of a ghost trade. I've been saying that forever. And even when I was an apprentice, my original boss, mentor, worked in New York in the early 70s. And he stayed 5 years in New York. And when he came back, I remember him telling me, you know, Bruno, in America, there's absolutely no upholsterers. Maybe one day you ought to consider going there. And so he wasn't already in the 70s. He was complaining about the lack of training and the lack of labor force in America. So,
yeah. So what advice would you give for someone? Because obviously, if you're in the States, you can't come to the UK. So what advice would you give to someone in the States to actually learn the trade? Is there a
take as many classes as possible? If you see that there is a class offered by upholstery education in San Diego, take that class. Take as many. If you see something in the internet, just take a class.
Yeah.
It's there is no formal training. So, and again, the people that are interested are not in their late teens, unlike what we have in France.
Yeah.
People that are interested in the mid 30s. So it's, I think it's challenging for someone at 35 to enter a shop and sweep the floor for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's an image, but, want to learn and not being told anything because, the boss is afraid you're going to take his job.
There's
also that, you know.
No, that's a big one here as well, I think.
Yeah.
And
so training remains a big issue, I think.
Yeah.
And from what I learned in England, it is also becoming an issue.
Yeah, I think it's better in some ways, but mm-hmm. still.
You know,
I mean, there's a big sort of switch off point at when they finish the AMUSF course,
right,
as to where they can go from, you know, that's quite a big problem that somehow needs to be thought of and fixed, but it needs better people than me to do that, but it needs to be doing. Sort of moving on from that as well, what frustrates you about the trade? Is that something that you feel a bit sad about, or are there other parts of it that get you?
No, the real frustration is, you know, when you develop a business, like upholstery business in America, and you realize that there is all this work, there is a lot of potential in terms of work, but to find the right people to do the work is extremely challenging, particularly, it all depends on what you sell. But personally, I was selling a certain product and a certain know-how, and all the people I had working for me, even if they had 10, 15, 20 years of experience, had to be retrained because I was selling something very particular. So this is a frustration. The main frustration is not being able to find the labor force, educated labor force. The trade by itself, I mean, could be frustrating, but it's already a given. I mean, upholstery is not an easy trade. So if you go to the shop in Monday morning and you think you're going to have an easy day, you're going to have to work at it.
Totally. So what plans have you got for the future? Is this just something you're going to do forever, or will you retire one day?
I think the future to me is perpetrating the knowledge, teaching people. Yeah. I think it's time to I mean, I have enough experience that I want to share what, you know, I'm not bringing to my grave. That's definitely not an option. I want to leave a legacy or mark somewhere, you know. And if it is to teach a youngster, even if they are 20 or 30 or whoever wants to learn, this is where I am at.
Yeah.
So I want to teach, yeah.
It would be such a valuable thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
to me too, because I realized I had, when I was in Brooklyn, I had a shop in Brooklyn. I had three boys. I would say boys because they were I was in my mid 50s and they were in their early 30s. And and they finished their Tour de France. They had already, they were compagnons. They were really full-fledged compagnons. They're already behind them 7 years of apprenticeship. And then they needed to learn more. And I realized that their youth and their enthusiasm just basically made me feel very at home. It was very important for me to be surrounded by youngsters, you know, and that want to learn. And the enthusiasm was contagious, because after a while, you know, you can look at your work and say, you know, I'm kind of tired of it, but you have to be able to renew that that flame, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
And teaching, I think, is one way to renew it.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. I
mean, I've been in the trade for a long time as well, but I've never had the opportunities to learn the skills that you have and many others like yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's only in later life that I've realised how passionate I am about the job. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? For a long time, it was a job. And then all of a sudden, you start to mix with people who have got much higher standards and you learn so much. And it's that whole part of the trade that I think you're never too old to learn. You're never too, you know, I think there's a tendency to believe that if you've been in the trade a long time, then somehow that entitles you. And you're always learning, aren't you?
Yeah, and there's also, you know, there's learning and learning. Some people are just learning because they want to make a quick buck, so to speak, or they want to make a living at it. But there is also learning for the craft sake, you know, just to make sure that you're doing it right according to rules and that has been set up a long way, long time ago, you know.
Yeah. So I kind of know the answer to this one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you relax outside of upholstery?
Good one. Hike, walk.
Yeah.
Read, write, cook. And a glass of wine and cook. That's a lot of pleasures there, a lot of relaxation.
Mm-hmm. But music must be part of that, surely.
Music, it's been in hiatus for a while. Yeah.
Oh, has this?
That's
okay. That's a shame. What do you play? What instruments do you play?
I used to play trumpet.
Okay.
And bass, guitar, and now I have a tendency to go towards electronic instruments, such as the electronic woodwind instrument, which is an amazing instrument. It emulates 250 different kind of instruments. So you can basically do all kind of fun stuff with it. And you don't have to practice every day to be good at it. You just do it.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you have to keep your embouchure, you know, your muscles and all that. It's not like that.
So what are you into? What excites you with music?
Well, I came originally here because I fell in love with jazz when I was 13 years old. Yeah. So, you know, coming here is, I mean, Berklee College of Music is basically, originally was a jazz school, but it became just now a music business school. And it involves jazz too, but, jazz, classical, world music, and any fusion, you know,
Any
fusion music is also nice.
Big fan of jazz myself, so that will lead on to the last question, which seems a shame because that's not quite long enough, really, because you're a man of many talents. But so in the UK we have a program called Desert Island Discs, where you are at the end of the show, you're allowed to choose a book, a film, and a piece of music. Do you have a choice?
A book, it would have to be a French book. It's not a classic, and it's not, and unfortunately not translated. I don't think it's has been translated yet in English, unfortunately. It's called Les Dames du Faubourg. Some translate like the ladies of the Faubourg. It's basically the story of an abbey in the Faubourg Saint-Antoine, which is basically the hub of the furniture industry since the Middle Ages in Paris. Right. And the abbey was the only place for the artisans that would allow them to be creative and to be free from the guild, because the guild has very constrained, rigid laws and regulation on how to do your work. So the abbey was basically, or the monastery was a safe place for the artisan to express themselves. When they were commissioned to do sculptures of the saints or any Catholic paraphernalia and things like that. And they could also build furniture according to how they want to build furniture. And it created basically a school of thought and helped develop what became the most important furniture mecca in France and in Europe for that matter. Because then, and so it's a three books, and it started in the Middle Ages and ends in 1960. And it talks about this particular neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
And the furniture maker. So it involves everybody, you know, it's an amazing historic novel.
Yeah, it sounds
yeah,
fascinating. Yeah. It's in French. I'll have to learn French.
Yeah.
Working on it, but not very well. So
a movie.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I think maybe The Red Violin.
Oh, man, no. I love that film. The Red Violin is an amazing film. Wow. That would definitely be my film. It's such a good film. I absolutely adore that film.
Yeah, it has a great
brilliant
message.
Story.
And he relate really well with craftsmanship and what you put into it and all that. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great one.
It's an amazing film. And a piece of music?
Oh, there's so many.
I know. I didn't say it was gonna be easy.
Yeah. I will say Bach.
Okay. Which what?
Which one? Maybe the Brandenburg Concertos.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I can live with that for the rave in a desert island.
Yeah. Not a piece of jazz then.
Oh, jazz. Maybe Four by Miles Davis.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, 1965. But it's 60 miles. Yeah.
God, I could talk to you for hours about music. A question that I've thought of is, when you went to the States, presumably you could speak English when you arrived there, or not?
Yes, you have to be proficient in English before to be accepted in college. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I learned. I was fortunate to go to England when I was a kid.
I was 14,
13, and stayed within British families for a couple of weeks, which was, you know, that's how I fell in love with Brits.
Oh, bad luck. So, are you coming back to the UK at all in the near future? Do you know, or don't you know?
Post COVID, that's the plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it'd be great to meet you if you do.
Yes, it will be great. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, unless you've got anything else to say, sadly, that's come to an end. But I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was very fun.
Fascinating man. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Cheerio. Okay.